All right, everybody, I hope you can hear me okay. This is Sergeant Major Stott, and this is our second session of Speak with Sergeant Major. Today we have staff sergeants and sergeants from all across our globe here, across the Army, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your questions and having dialogue. Again, I want to thank you for this opportunity for us to dialogue together, for you to ask me questions. Sky's the limit. If I don't have an answer, we'll get you an answer. And with that, let's go ahead and get started.
Sergeant Major.
Motion.
Yes.
Sergeant Chris Patchen up at Joint Base, Elmendorf Richardson.
All right. Alaska.
Yes, Sergeant Major. What is the Chaplain Corps response or position if religion and denominations continue to be identified, labeled as extremist organizations?
Okay, say that one again. What is the chaplain's? Say it for me again.
I guess looking at the labeling of religion / denominations as extremist organizations.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of been a hot topic within our brigade this past week and a half.
Okay.
What will the Chaplain Corps response be to that, and what position will they take?
Okay, well, actually, we've taken a position. Just to rehash, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, but and your timing's right, about 2 weeks ago, there was a equal opportunity class that had surfaced, and in that class there was a couple of slides, one slide in particular that was talking about extremist groups, and the slide had several a few mainline religions that were named in the extremist group category, and then there were about two or three other slides subsequent to that talking about extremist groups that really kind of focused its tailoring in towards the Islamic extremist groups. First off, that just to let you know, that briefing was brought to our attention. We ran it to ground. Actually, I got personally involved with it along with our chief of staff and a couple other people on staff. Found out that was a particular unit that had put together the briefing, and that a soldier in that unit had raised the issue and had put in a complaint at the unit level. An apology was made, and that actual briefing was taken off the market. And that was about a year ago that this went down. Unfortunately, as is with all things that go on the internet or in other areas, the briefing kind of went viral, and that it made its way across camps, posts, and stations, and emails into other venues. And then there was some misinterpretation as to what was going on with the briefing. For example, some thought that this was an official briefing that was being given at the chaplain school. This was a briefing going out in other areas, all of which were not true. So that was a long explanation to say, actually, our position on that is obviously those religions that were listed, we do not consider those extremist group religions. Actually, as subject matter experts, we advise on the religious aspects of it, but really the lane that briefing fell under was the responsibility of equal opportunity, because that it was their briefing. And they put it together. But like I said, the briefing was corrected. That slide was taken out. So the thing that went viral, unfortunately, is dated material that didn't even apply. So we responded to that. I don't know if that answers your question accurately.
Thank you, Sergeant Major.
Okay. Good question. It's interesting that you all in Alaska got that information. Okay, next question.
Sergeant Major, this is Star Monroe from Fort Wainwright, also in Alaska.
All right, Alaska. All right. Another Alaska question.
My question is, how much does the skill level on the MTO affect a soldier's career? For example, right now I have an E5 to place, but only an E4 position to put her in. Should I be concerned about that placement?
Okay. Good question. All right. Here's real quick, let me explain to you how the assignment process works, not the whole deal, but as it relates to your particular question. By the book, you can assign someone one level down or up to two levels up, i.e., if you, for example, if you have a sergeant, that sergeant, based on the mission, based on where they're at, could either go into a skill level one, a specialist coded position, or actually go to a position at the staff sergeant or sergeant first class level in extreme circumstances if there's not, personnel to fill that position. In many cases, there can be reasons for that. For example, somebody can get promoted, they're stuck in an installation or an area and can't move for any particular time, so you have to put them someplace, or they're currently located in a position that's a grade below what their current rank is. Now, your question is, if I understood it correctly, how will that affect them professionally? How will it affect an individual professionally? Well, when you look at skill level one through, I would say, skill level one and two, it's really not going to affect them that much. Reason being, your promotion to sergeant and to staff sergeant are really based on localized issues and the things that you do. We really don't look at the assignment piece per se as a selection criteria towards your promotion. Now, when you get to staff sergeant, that's when it gets dicey, because as a staff sergeant, when you get looked at for being promoted to sergeant first class, then it matters what slot you're sitting in, because then we're looking at sort of a history there of the positions that you're in, whether you're at the right grade slot. If you're serving at a higher level slot, we want to take that into consideration towards your promotion potential. But at the skill level one and two level, it's really not as important. We try to match up everybody with the right skill level. But if you happen to have a situation where you're full up and you can't move anybody, there's things you can look at there. For example, if you've had soldiers that have been in a unit for at least 24 months or longer, you may want to look at flip-flopping them out to another position. There's different things that can be done there. But the bottom line answer to your question is that it's not going to really affect you. If you're a young new sergeant, for example, and you're being assigned to a skill level one slot because there's no skill level two slots or sergeant slots available, that won't kill you in the long run. Okay?
Roger, Sergeant Major. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good question. All right. Next.
Sergeant Major. Staff Sergeant Black with 43rd Sustainment Brigade, CMRE, Kandahar Airfield.
All right.
Drawdown, how will it affect our end strength for our MOS?
Okay, actually, we're very healthy right now in the MOS in a positive. Now, with the drawdowns, the only thing that's happening there with unit drawdowns is, like, for example, if a BCT gets cut, all the force structure in that BCT goes away. So that's the only way right now that we're losing slots. Now, about a year ago, we've gone through what we call a standards of grade authorization drawdown. The standards of grade are all the positions that we have on the TDA and TOE side. And what the standards of grade is what at each level, what grades there are and what positions there are across the Army for all our chaplain assistants. We can only carry those numbers at each grade. We can only carry a certain percentage. And every few years, our proponency office, along with other agencies throughout the Army, go through sort of a balancing of the checkbook, if you will, of, excuse me, making sure that those slots are the correct number of what we're authorized. Sometimes we have to downgrade those, and that means, like, if we have too many master sergeants, we have to downgrade some of those positions so that we're in compliance with the standards of grade. We just went through one of those just recently, a few months ago, and it complete about maybe 4 or 5 months ago. But with that, we did have some slots that were downgraded. It didn't hurt the staff sergeant and sergeant level too much. As a matter of fact, we're still carrying an exception of policy of an overage at numbers for our sergeant's level, but that's so we're able to keep the maneuver battalion positions the level we need them to do the mission in the Army. So we're able to carry those higher numbers. Did get hit in the area of, for example, areas like MCOM. So we did lose some slots at some of our installations. But not too much that it should hurt us. The key there now is making sure that you're staying qualified, as well as looking at in your area for reenlistment, or if you're looking at areas where you want to reenlist, try and look for areas where we have slots, like our BCTs, our TOE slots, because our shortage areas are in the garrison, as many of you in the garrison may already know. Okay?
Hi, Sergeant Major. This is Staff Sergeant Parker from Joint Base Lewis McCord.
All right. We're working our way west or east.
To caveat on that, Sergeant Major, my question for a brigade NCOIC, what would be your recommendation for a rating scheme in the absence of the brigade chaplain?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. You're asking what would be a good rating scheme in absence of the brigade chaplain. When you say absence, do you mean that the you just don't have one, or they haven't arrived yet?
He's PCS, won't be here I don't get another one until July, Sergeant Major.
I see. And he won't be there yet?
Negative.
Okay. All right. What I would recommend is, when you had the brigade chaplain, who was the senior raider?
The XO.
Okay. So that's one way that can be done. The XO can be the raider. Now, sometimes I know, depending upon the area you're in, that may be a hard to do. But if we go by the book, it should be whoever that raider's individual was, the next person should pick up that responsibility for the raiding period. Okay? That would be the easiest and most logical way to do it. If you get into picking and choosing other people, then you run outside of the unit, then it gets kind of complicated. In some cases, depending upon the circumstances, you may want to look to maybe one of the battalion chaplains within the brigade, but I would highly recommend keeping that senior raider in place. Now, if there's something that prohibits that, i.e. the brigade chaplain or the brigade XO, for example, is new and doesn't qualify, then you may have to look out of the box at other options there. But the book answer to that would be whoever the next higher in the chain is, that's who should be the raider.
Large time, Major.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good question.
Sergeant Major Stott, this is Staff Sergeant Weitzel with Arson at Shaw Air Force Base.
All right, Shaw. Now we're way east, all the way over.
A question pertaining to strong bonds and accommodating for our brothers and sisters that happen to be homosexual or lesbian, and pertaining to marriage retreats and chaplains that in their certain denominations might not feel comfortable in that situation teaching that might go against their denomination. How are we going to accommodate for these other soldiers?
Oh, okay. Well, the easy answer to that is we don't have any more money for strong bonds. So your whole question, I can't even address it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding that we don't have money, but I got to answer the question. All right. Here's the situation. There's a acronym called DOMA, D-O-M-A. All right. Defense of Marriage Act.
Roger.
All right. That is what is riding the train when it comes to what we can or cannot do in relation to marriage counseling and so forth as it relates to strong, or in this case, talking about strong bonds retreats. The chaplaincy's official position on this, along with the rest of DOD, is that we fall under the DOMA. And DOMA now still states that marriage is officially between a man and a woman. So when it comes to those retreats, when it comes to those issues, the chaplaincy, as long as we are still in charge of the Strong Bonds program and providing that, DOMA guides us in terms of what we can provide to our soldiers. Now,
right.
With that being said, your question's a very valid one when it comes to same-sex couples that want to have some type of, whether it be counseling or some type of accommodations for them. That really becomes a command decision for a commander to determine how he or she wants to take care of that for the soldiers in their unit.
What happens when the DOMA potentially, I mean, it seems like the political swaying of the pendulum is moving towards DOMA going away.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, then what do you see? I mean, you really can't see the future, but what would happen at that point?
All right. If DOMA's changed or goes away, then you know, we have to drop back and punt like everybody else and look at how effectively we can provide religious support. Now, just like the current situation with soldiers across the board that happen to be same-sex, if they come to the chaplain for counseling or what have you, the chaplain still has a responsibility to provide for them. Now, what that means is that if he or she is the chaplain, cannot directly do it, they have, they just like us, have to coordinate to get that coverage from someone else. And we would do the same thing in regards to couples and marriage counseling and the like. We would just have to coordinate in the community with someone that could provide those services for the same-sex couple, if that makes sense.
Is it possible that a chaplain, instead of doing a marriage retreat, would be encouraged or maybe told to do like a relationship retreat so it doesn't have the word marriage in it? Or
that could, I mean, that's speculatory. It really depends on, at that point, it's really going to depend on the chaplain, their denomination, and how they can or cannot provide that direct support based on where they're coming from and what the commander's guidance is. But it would still fall under, you know, at that point, for example, if a chaplain happens to be of a particular denomination that cannot support a same-sex, whether it be counseling or marriage or retreat or what have you, then again, it's still his or her responsibility to find someone that can, but they do not have to run an event for the commander that is in violation of their tenets of the belief system, if you understand what I mean there.
Roger, Sergeant Major, appreciate it.
Yeah, they would have to advise the commander on how best to go about doing something like that.
Cool.
Okay. Good question.
Sergeant Major, Staff Sergeant Newville at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Sergeant Newville, how you doing?
Sergeant Major, how you doing?
All right. I'm shaking in my boots. Go ahead. I'll try and answer this question because you always come up with good ones.
Oh, Roger, Sergeant Major. With the Army stance on toxic leadership, what is the chaplaincy stance on toxic chaplains?
Toxic. That's an oxymoron, isn't it, sir? Toxic and chaplains? I can't imagine. I can assure you that the chief of chaplains, the deputy, and myself all have a direct issue of being adverse to any type of toxic leadership. And that's whether we're talking leaders that are non-chaplains, you know, officers, NCOs, and within the chaplains' corps. Definitely, you know, the book answer on that is we don't tolerate that type of leadership. Now, with that being said, I'm sure there's probably a wide variance across you in the Army in determining and defining what toxic leadership is and how it affects. I mean, you know, that can be as varied as some soldiers. You know, a chaplain may walk in, have a bad hair day or something, say something to them, and right away they're labeled as a toxic leader. Or if they're being told to do something they don't agree with, right away, that's a toxic leader coming down on me, trying to make me do something I don't want to do. As staff sergeants and sergeants, at the level that you work, you all face and see a lot of this every day, whether it's within the Corps or outside of the Corps. Hopefully it's not widespread, but I can tell you at the senior leadership level, we do not tolerate that type of leadership in any way, shape, or form. But again, we're at the top. You all probably see a lot more of that than we do. To that end, if there are issues that you come across like that, it's important for you to raise it to a trusted agent and upper echelon leader so that can be looked into. And you can do that through talking through a mentor, talking through a senior leader that's outside of that chain that you feel trusted that you can talk to that can bring the issue to bear so that it can be fixed. Does that answer the mail, Sergeant Newbill?
Roger, Sergeant Major, a follow-on question with that.
Sure, no problem. We're here. Okay. We got plenty of time.
Sergeant Major, but with that, is there going to be guidelines to help understand, because Fort Bragg's version of toxic chaplaincy may not be the same as Fort Jackson, it may not be the same as downrange. Will there be guidance that come down from your level that help further explain, not only to the chaplain's assistants, to the chaplains as well, maybe when they go through courses, help expand?
Mm-hmm. Well, our guidance falls in line with what the Army's guidance is as it relates to the FM on leadership, as it relates to the Army values, as it relates to all these things in terms of who we are as Army professionals. Our guidance in that is no different than it would be for any officer or NCO. Can you give me an example of what you're identifying as a toxic issue? And please don't name names.
basically, it's
unless it's mine, you can bust me out. But go ahead, Sergeant. I'm sorry.
It's the abuse of rank in conjunction with the abuse of the cross.
Okay. If I'm tracking with what you're saying, are you meaning that confusing the role of the chaplain versus the role of the staff officer?
Sergeant Sergeant Major, as well as abusing the role as a pastor to the soldiers within the unit.
Okay, well, what would be an example in your interpretation as an abuse?
Boxing the soldier in and forcing him to go to a Bible study.
Ah, okay, that's a good one. That's a good one, and that would fall under that would definitely fall under a type of toxic leadership. We shouldn't by any means do that, whether we're a chaplain or chaplain assistant. No problem in encouraging soldiers to go and offer them the opportunity, but if the soldier says no, No should mean no. But now, see, that in my mind is a simple leadership issue. I mean, you know, that shouldn't be something we shouldn't at our level have to put out on a laundry list to say don't do this, but it should fall in line with the common sense principles of application of leadership. And what I would say there is that if a chaplain is doing something like that, and there are those around him that are aware of the situation, they need to bring it to light to the higher leaders so that the leaders can properly mentor that chaplain to do the right thing.
I'm sorry, Major. But
yeah.
In some cases, there may be retaliation because the command team is also toxic. So the chaplain has taken after what the command does on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, you have that person, you have that, the good Samaritan that do want to do the right thing for it, but then there's fear of retaliation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, again, I think the answer, the bottom line answer is still, like I mentioned early on, taking that to a trusted agent. And if there's a particular situation, by all means, and I say this to all you all as NCOs, that my door is always open to you, but it's important to use the technical chain and the chain of command to get your issues fixed. But if it's something that's serious that you think that I really need to weigh in on, by all means, that's an after this email or phone call to say, hey, Sergeant Major, here's the details, and I can help you work through that or towards getting it fixed. But I would say, along with those lines, is check with your officer and NCO leadership there first before coming here, because give them the opportunity to get into fixing whatever the problem may be.
Sergeant Major, I'm clear, but you'll have that email by the end of the week.
I got you, Sergeant Newbelt. See, I knew that you were going to have an interesting question. All right, next one.
Sergeant Major, this is Sergeant Tillinghast from Fort Meade, Maryland.
All right, Fort Meade, right up the road.
And my question is, I am an ALC Phase 2 graduate. I'm having an issue getting enrolled in the ALC Common Core. My S3 said that branch needs to enroll me, and other people says that after I pin on my E6, I'm automatically enrolled. Do you have any guidance in this situation, Sergeant Major?
What I'm going to do, Sergeant, that one we're taking down as a question because I've heard this before. I just got to double check with our proponency office to make sure to get you the right answer on that, because I heard two different things, and to be honest with you, I've heard the same thing from where you're coming from, so I just need to get with our proponency and get back with you to answer that question. So let me rephrase it to make sure I understand. You're a Phase 2 graduate from ALC, and you're looking to go to Phase 1, and the problem is, the question is, if I hear you, who is responsible for getting you into that course?
Yes, Sergeant Major.
Got it. We will check that out, and towards the end, I will give you my contact information, so if you could shoot me an email, just so I know who you are, I can answer you back directly, okay?
Roger that, Sergeant Major.
Great, all right.
Sergeant Major, Staff Sergeant Bennett from 2nd Recruiting Brigade, Redstone Arsenal.
Hoo-ah, Redstone.
Cool. Sergeant Major, do you know if it's a plan to fill every battalion in recruiting with chaplain and chaplain assistants in the future?
Yeah, I forward them everything that you sent
yeah.
to us.
Yeah, there's always that plan. that is the plan. We do want to try and get it 100%. Part of the problem right now, I can, and I'm speaking specifically to the chaplain assistant issue, is that since we're at war and we still have units that are priority fills, those there's a priority from HRC in terms of the fill ratio based by command. Now that's slowly going to start changing now, particularly since we're looking at drawing down the war. For those of you that may have been in or took a look at the recent week's Army Times, I think it had an article in there talking about the next units that are due for deployment to Afghanistan. You'll see those units as those units start to dwindle down, as we start to draw back from that, slowly but surely, hopefully, we'll be able to start funneling chaplain assistance over into the areas where we traditionally, like your unit and other units, have not been able to get fills to 100%. So our goal is to get those fills back in, but I can't tell you this very second how soon I'll get back to 100%, but the goal is to get there, definitely.
Roger that.
Cool. Yeah, I would say realistically,
Sergeant Honor Auto, 1st Brigade, 82nd Airborne Division.
Okay, hold 1 second, Sergeant. The last comment I was going to make on that is within the next, I want to say within the next 24 months, we should start to really see a shift of a lot of assignments for fills getting back into the garrison and the and those areas that before have been tough to fill. I would give it about 24 months or so when we'll start seeing fills back the other direction. Okay?
Cool.
All right, great. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt that last person. Go ahead and come on.
Sergeant Honor Auto, 1st Brigade, 82nd Airborne Division.
Who?
Major, I was wondering, how can we encourage / recruit chaplains and assistants to go to airborne school to fill the shortages they're having in the airborne community?
Well, if we promise them to go anywhere else other than 1st Brigade, we should get a lot of takers. That's a joke.
Try cold, Sergeant Major.
I'm a Falcon. That's why I'm saying that. I start out in 2nd Brigade. But we do that. Now, one of the things that we do, just so you know, I don't know if you've cut back on that at Fort Bragg because of current funding issues, but we do, I know... Sergeant Jarman and team there from time to time, along with USASOC, pays a visit to the chaplain school to try to recruit our new AITers going to airborne school. I know we have tried to get a normal rotation of that going on, and I know there are units across the Army that do airborne recruiting and so forth. So those are the big areas of where we try to get recruiting going. Another way of doing this, and this is just word of mouth, I'm sure you all have heard this thing called Facebook, that and I'm sure that maybe one of two of you out there may be members that talk out there, but we do have different communication groups on Facebook that talk, and there's nothing wrong with you all in the airborne community selling your wares to your compadres across the Army, telling them how great it is to be a part of the Sarah of the Universe there at Fort Bragg and jump out of airplanes. Because of the job I'm officially in, I cannot say for the record that that is the most rewarding thing that a soldier could possibly do in their entire career. I would never go on record of saying that officially, because there are a lot of different areas to serve. But, you know, I really enjoyed it during my time in the airborne and would encourage those to do that if they could. But no pressure from me. Does that answer your question, Sergeant?
Sergeant Major Sergeant Caldwell, 108 Brigade, special duties chaplain assistant. I've been doing this special duty assignment over a year now.
Oh, wow.
And I was a specialist back at battalion level, and I became a E5 during this
okay.
assignment. Went to brigade level, and I'm planning on reclassing, but it seems that in and out calls are not exactly on my side.
Right.
And I would like to adjust my expectations to reclassing to a 56 mic. Would like to see your take on what would be my expectations? What's the future of 56 Mike Holden? You know, could I foresee myself reclassing, Sergeant Major?
Are you, Sergeant, if I may ask, are you in your reenlistment window now?
Not yet, Sergeant Major.
Okay. First off, let me start off by saying thank you for you for taking up. I don't know your personal circumstances around how you ended up working with the Corps, but I do want to thank you because I understand that in many cases our SDs are working because we either have a shortage, of chaplain assistants in the area, or there are other circumstances that relate to that. So I do want to say thank you for your service that you're currently serving. Unfortunately, right now, with the Army drawdown, and as we're tightening our belts, like you mentioned, the in and out calls probably are not favorable to you because of where we are sitting in our numbers. Chaplain assistant happens to be one of those MOSs where a lot of us love the job. You know, I've been doing this for 32 and a half years, and I think I'll stick around for the last year or so. It's pretty good, even though I have a secondary of infantry and love that. I'll stick with being a chaplain assistant. But a lot of our chaplain assistants reenlist, stay in, and are really enjoying the job. So as a result, our in calls for getting our reclasses or getting reclasses right now are pretty slim, particularly with the drawdown. The best thing I can tell you is to just keep a sharp eye on it, because I know from month to month these things change, and there may be an opportunity for you to slip in it by way of a reenlistment option. But you really just got to watch it month to month, because it can change on the eaches. And the best I can do for you right now is hope and pray that it does work out for you. To be fair, across what's happening in the Army right now with this drawdown, they're just really being tight. For example, you're trying to get in. The other challenge I'm having with our skill level ones right now that are coming up for reenlistment, they're trying to stay in because of their overage numbers. They're not being allowed even to stay in the MOS. They have to look as well at going to overstrength MOS right now. So that's a tight issue on both sides. So I wish I had a better answer for you on that, but it's really a timing issue right now. So the best I could tell you is just stay working with your reenlistment NCO in terms of what those windows look like, and hopefully the door will open for you.
Roger that. I appreciate, Sergeant Major, the opportunity.
All right. Thank you.
Sergeant Major, Staff Sergeant Bennett, 2nd Recruiting Brigade, Red Arsenal.
Yes, Redstone.
Cool. Sergeant Major, if you have a TS, does the assignments branch take that into consideration before they assign you?
They can. Or now, it depends on where you're going to. Definitely take in consideration if you're being looked at for a assignment within the INSCOM world, where our chaplain assistants all require a TS clearance. But the other jobs, the preponderance of our jobs, of course, all require a secret clearance. So that's something. When you're looking at an assignment, and are you asking because you're interested in keeping that clearance active?
Roger, that's our major. I was told by my security person here, if I don't get an assignment, my next assignment is not a TS assignment. They're probably downgraded to a secret.
Right, right. And that's normally what happens. And particularly right now because of funding issues, because it costs thousands of dollars to maintain these clearances, particularly with the upgrades and so forth. So when you're moving from one place to another, the rule of thumb is, particularly if you're not going to be utilizing that clearance, then we do, well, we, Big Army, does look at downgrading the clearance. Won't go below secret. but it would be based on where you would be assigned and what you would be doing.
Roger, that's my major.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't get it back if you were to go back to an assignment that requires that clearance.
Cool.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Sergeant Major Storm Blackwood, 43rd Sustainment Brigade, CMRE, Kandahar Airfield.
All right.
Other than attending airborne or air assault, after completing SLC and battle staff, mm-hmm. what schools do you recommend to remain competitive and for professional development?
Excellent question. And actually, you just hit the nail on the head there, Sergeant. That's good. Battle staff, like you mentioned, battle staff, there's, and you already said you've already, I take it you've already been through that. There's the Emergency Medical Ministry course that's out there. Within the functional realm, there is the Funds Manager course. That's another one. And to speak to that, just to give you a heads up, the reason why I mentioned that course in particular is we are looking at down the road making that as an ASI producing school. So that would be another good professional development course for you to go through on the Garrison side of the house as you're looking at building your overall professional development profile.
Roger, Sergeant Major.
Definitely.
I've been to fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Sergeant Major.
No, go ahead. What were you saying?
I've been to funds, EMM, the battle staff, and completed SLC. So I was really looking for what next step should I take?
Okay, if you have, for example, if you have any instructor courses that are offered there at your installation or in the region, and the funding's available, getting instructor qualified would be an excellent thing to do. Obviously, assignment-wise, if the opportunity affords itself, take on a special duty assignment, volunteer for that, such as drill sergeant or recruiting. Those areas definitely enhance or career enhancers. Any localized training that would help you improve not only being a chaplain assistant, but an overall soldiering skills, leadership schools, things of that nature that are offered. Lot of online training that's going. I assume that you're all caught up with your SSD.
Yes, Sergeant Major.
Okay, good. Which is another thing that's very important. But basically, right now, if you're hitting the mark on hitting all the normal schools that would be typical for a chaplain assistant, then definitely broadening schools at the local area that deal with overall Army leadership or things like that are beneficial, even if it's possible. Now, the only danger, the way schools normally work in the Army, is that if you do any specialized training, the expectation is that you pay us back by doing that training or doing that skill. For example, if you went through the chemical course that teaches you to be, or an MBC course, for example, Suburney course, there may be an expectation in the unit that you become the Suburney person, depending upon what, or MBC person, depending upon what unit you're in. So some of that you want to be kind of careful about, that you're not shortchanging yourself in terms of your ability to do your job as a chaplain assistant. Definitely those specialized ACE, assist, those type of courses that help you hone your skills in regard to suicide prevention, things like that, which I assume you're probably all over things, those type of schools.
Yes, Sergeant Major. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend if you could guarantee that your unit wasn't going to try to put you in the position of maybe EO or SHARP or MRT?
Right, and that's what I was just alluding to. There's no problem with doing those type of courses, but you wanna be careful in terms of not get stepping outside of your lane in terms of that becoming your full-time job versus your full-time job as a chaplain assistant. Because as you know, what you do as a chaplain assistant is a very specific role as it relates to the overall comprehensive soldier fitness for that unit. So you want to be able to still be free up, but that doesn't mean you can't do those type of things. It just takes a lot of coordination between you, your chaplain, and the leadership there to make sure that you're not overworked. Okay?
Roger, Sergeant Major.
All right, good. I think we got time for maybe one or two more questions. If there,
Sergeant Major, Staff Sergeant Bennett, 2nd Recruiting Brigade, Redstone Arsenal.
Okay, go ahead.
Cool. The IG of the Army was here last week, and he was talking to us about getting with the Sergeant Major of the Army of strongly recommending that civilian college be taken away from promotion consideration.
Ah, okay. And the rationale for that was?
That he had came across a young soldier that had only been in the Army 5 years, and he had already had his master's degree.
Okay.
And a lot of us said that, hey, that must have been his MOS. And, you know, he just asked the young soldier, what else have you did for the military? And he was just like, basically just went to school and received my master's degree so in 5 years.
Okay.
So he said he wanted to, they wanted to be geared more to military education instead of civilian education.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I hear that. Now, part of the problem is that as Big Army, we have invested a lot of time and money in totally restructuring the Army to get on the mindset that civilian education is a very useful component to the overall professionalism.
Right.
So the part of the challenge would be, is that if we go back and have that taken out of the promotion profile, then you're really taking a big piece of the pie away in terms of motivating soldiers to get that civilian education.
Roger, he said a lot of soldiers that deploy a lot don't have the opportunities to go to college, and such as a soldier that's been in garrison his whole career, or, you know, set himself up for assignments to where he could just only go to school. So
right, and I would understand and agree that there are soldiers that fit what you described, that they go, you know, to Fort Snuffy, and they're there, and the hardest thing they have to do is, and we're talking chaplain assistants, so they may have like one service on Sunday that lasts 30 minutes, and then the rest of the week they're sitting behind the desk and got nothing to do but go to school. At the same time, you just described the other end of the stick where a young soldier's out, say somewhere like in Korea, using that as an example, up in the 2nd Infantry Division, where they're one deep in a battalion, they're in the field every other week and working 6-7 days a week, and they have like chapel services that start at 7 a.m. and go to like 2200 on a Sunday, so they really don't have time to sit behind the desk and do the college thing. So obviously I just described two extremes. The reality for both of those is that for the vast majority of soldiers in the Army, it's somewhere in the middle. And so what I would say to you is that where the happy medium in that is an effective leadership that gets involved not only in empowering soldiers to get that civilian education, but yet also doing the right thing in terms of making sure that they're investing enough time in their job, military education, and other areas. But at this point, I don't think it's really realistic that we're going to be able to turn the ship, as it were, to use a Navy term, to get that aircraft carrier turned around on a dime to say that we're not going to recognize civilian education. I think what the key there is, leadership at any level has to look at actively how is that soldier being gainfully employed where they're at, and are they using as much time available for the mission as well as doing their own personal development?
Roger that, Sergeant Major. Also, have you heard anything about the name change for chaplain assistant?
I've heard a lot about that. Depends on who you talk to, which day of the week. There is an idea that we're looking at in terms of possibly changing the name of the chaplain assistant. The deputy chief of chaplains, I know he talks about it, when he visits. Here's the bottom line of what we're looking at in that issue. When you look at the name chaplain assistant, obviously it links to one key thing, that we work exclusively for the chaplain. What it doesn't do is kind of get into describing holistically and comprehensively what chaplain assistants all do. So one of the things that we're looking at in regards to the name change is coming up with a name that accurately articulates what we do, not only in regards to assisting the chaplain, but in our own lane as it relates to the entire religious support picture. Does that make sense?
Roger that, Sergeant.
Yeah, so we are looking at that, but trust me, when we hit that on a broad scale, you'll hear about it and hear about it in a way that also you all in the field will have opportunity to put your two cents in as to what you would like to see in terms of a name change.
Cool.
Okay?
Sergeant Major, this is Staff Sergeant Cortez, Joint Base Lewis McChord.
Okay, great. And before you start, let me just let you know, that'll be our last question. You'll get to be our last question, so go ahead.
With our regulation stating that the brigade chaplain assistant should have control over the battalion chaplain assistants as far as what their duties are for each day. The problem that we run into at the brigade level is that all of our battalion assets are assigned to the unit, and battling that battalion sergeant major for control of that assistant is, well, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that can be done or is being looked at in order to maybe attach the battalion assets up at the brigade level in the same way that legal NCOs are done?
There's a lot of discussion about that. Now, I'll give you, here's some ancient history for you. When I first came in the Army as a chaplain assistant, I was assigned to the brigade and not the battalion. The concept of the battalion assignment came up a lot later. There are definite advantages to being in the brigade, but unfortunately, from a bean counter force structure perspective, there's a danger to that. We are looking and discussing options as it relates to that. Now, the quick answer, because I know we're running out of time, but the bottom line answer of what I would say to you in this is, and hopefully those of you that are brigade NCOs, because I know you live this dream every day, the big question I have to you, and this relates to my top three priorities, again, and if you haven't seen them, what they are, first off, MOS qualification, making sure that our chaplain assistants are all qualified to do their job. Second point, key, and this relates exactly to what you're talking about and asking about, Sergeant, educating the command on our capabilities. And then, of course, the third one is knowing the rules and regulations that govern how we do business. All three of those, of course, relate exactly to the question you're asking. There's a right and a wrong way to talk to a sergeant major, okay? And this is just a little mentorship for you. Because when us sergeants major graduate from the academy, we get this thing called an ego chip that gets put in our head, okay? And we walk around feeling and knowing and understanding that we have all the infinite wisdom of the universe packed into our head, so whatever comes out of our mouth is the right answer. With that said, I will share with you this patented secret. You don't even have to pay me for it. Proper professional coordination is the key. And that goes back to educating the command. The rhetorical question I'll ask you, and I'm just not asking you, Sergeant, but everybody sitting out there listening. Have you taken time to educate your CSM on what it is that you do? Also understand that at each level, the higher level up is the bad guy. I'm at the DA level. I am the ultimate bad guy. No one likes me when I go visit wherever I go. Okay? Because we're the big guy. We're at the headquarters. So you run into that same thing at the brigade level. When you walk in the door at the battalion, you're the meddlesome brigade guy or girl. So you're going to have a challenge there. So what you have to do is sell that command sergeant major on you're their friend in terms of your responsibility as a subject matter expert, and help them to understand that your role as the NCO is to help that battalion chaplain assistant be a better soldier for them. If you approach professionally in doing that, believe it or not, they'll work with you. But you got to help them understand how they can help. And you have to learn that individual. Because remember, like I told you, a lot of my colleagues, they have that chip in their head. And they're like, well, there's nothing you young staff sergeant can tell me about how I run my chaplain assistant. So you got to be professional about it. You also have to be able to use your higher headquarters NCOs if you're having a bit of a challenge with that, in terms of communicating how they can be utilized. But on the positive note, to close out with this, I would let you know that if a sergeant major gets the information and they're educated professionally and properly in what the assets and capabilities of those chaplain assistants are, they'll work with you. Okay? Does that make sense? I know that's a quick answer in the brief amount of time we have, but that's kind of the key to it, is working through the communication of that.
Roger, Sergeant Major. Thank you.
All right. Hey, this has been a tremendous hour. I want to thank each and every one of you for everything that you do out there. At the level you're at as a chaplain assistant, probably one of the hardest grades to work in this job at as a staff sergeant and sergeant. The challenges you all at the brigade level are awesome, and then you sergeants at the battalion and in the garrison where you serve, you kind of are the unsung heroes. You know, particularly you young sergeants out there, you may, in most cases, not be in charge of soldiers, but you got those stripes, yet you have to still do those skill level one tasks that we all know and love on a daily basis. You do it without complaining. At least I don't hear you when you complain, but of course nobody complains to me. But I don't hear it, so I assume by the virtue of the fact that I don't hear it is that you're doing it with a smile on your face and you're keeping our chaplain straight. So thank you very much every day for the work that you do. I pray for each and every one of you every day, and I look forward to seeing you as we get out and travel. So without any further ado, I'll end it here. The other thing to remember, on Facebook, we have the Chief of Chaplains page, our Chaplain Corps page is on Facebook. Like I mentioned earlier, I know you have, we got several pages out there, but our official Chaplains Corps, U.S. Army Chaplains Corps page is on Facebook. I encourage every one of you to like it. And by liking it, I mean click like, so that you're members. And then also you can keep abreast of what's happening in the Chaplains Corps there. As well as we have DVIDs, get on DVIDs to listen not only to this webcast, but to the other video shots that we put out on a myriad of issues. And I encourage you to look at all those, not just my ugly mug, but look at what our Chief of Chaplains is talking about, our deputy, our DRE, and Chaplain Stice, and our other senior chaplains that are talking about things in our Corps, okay? All right, again, thank you very much for taking time to tune in, and for those NCOs that didn't get a chance to either ask a question or or even get to go to the podcast, pass the word so that they can listen to the podcast when we get it posted. This is Sergeant Major Stott out. Thank you.